It's not only inhumane, it is really fundamentally un-American.
Welcome to Cultural Baggage, the unvarnished truth about the drug war. You're listening to KPFT Houston, 90.1 FM. I am Dean Becker. Steve Nolan is our esteemed engineer. Tammy's on board to assist our callers, and we have a jam-packed show for you. We'll have Mark Boris, St. Morris, on in a little bit to talk about all the astounding news in Canada over the past month. First off, I've got to ask the question, what the hell is it gonna take? Each time we get to visit in our little clubhouse here, we talk about the politicians and the policemen who have already declared that the drug war is a miserable failure, doomed to eternal failure. We hear about more corrupt cocaine cowboy cops, more deranged judges, district attorneys, and politicians. And then we also hear about the great reforms taking place in civilized nations like Canada and the UK. And we see the positive results of their new policies. We hear about the scientific reports done outside U.S. government offices. These reports all say the policy of the U.S. mandated jihad against drugs has never done anything but make drugs more available, more pure, and less expensive than ever before. And we have the supposedly compassionate, conservative Christian coalition that nonetheless demands stricter enforcement and more draconian sentences for those who use a drug not sold by Lilly or Merck. So once again, I must ask, what the hell is it going to take? When will you please write that letter to the papers, to the editor? Or when will you call your congressman? When will you stand again against this infernal, wannabe eternal war on our own people? I was just wondering. Now, a little later, I'm going to invite you to please call us at 713-526-5738. I'll provide you with ways that you can become better informed and better involved in the effort to end this 88-year-old war. Just a bit later. Now, here's today's news. Over the past month or so, four astounding rulings have come from our northern neighbor, Canada. First off, our guest tonight, Boris Saint-Maurice and his associate, were acquitted of trafficking in marijuana when a judge threw out their charges because they were providing for medical marijuana patients. We'll have more on these other rulings a bit later, but just yesterday, an Ontario judge agreed that the federal government's medical marijuana access regulations are unconstitutional because they prevent more deserving people from exemption than they permit. The ruling from Superior Court Justice Sidney Letterman is binding on lower courts and will likely wreak further havoc on the laws in Canada that make possession of marijuana illegal. This was quoting a lawyer, Alan Young. He says, "We feel it will be appealed, but it's the light at the end of the tunnel. I can't really see the law maintaining any operation after this year. It's sitting on really precarious foundation." All right, some great news from the GAO, the U.S. Government Accounting Office. After spending billions in trying to eradicate the coca plant from the face of the earth and to make millions for the chemical manufacturer Monsanto, comes word from Colombia that the production of the coca plant has again increased by another 25%. In 1998, there were 101,800 hectares under cultivation. There were 122,500 in 1999, 136,200 in the year 2000, and just last year, in 2001, there were 169,800 hectares. So despite our best efforts, the amount of coca has increased by 67% in the last 3 years. Ah, the proud successes of the drug warriors, like Bob Barr. He's a former congressman who had his opinion showcased in Wednesday's Washington Times newspaper. Seems Bob was all upset that cops were unreasonably, even unconstitutionally, SWAT-teaming their way into D.C. Bars in Fairfax and arbitrarily arresting customers from their bar stools where they were suspected of being above the legal alcohol limit. Barr referenced last year's mega-hit movie Minority Report, starring Tom Cruise in a mid-21st century sci-fi thriller, where D.C. police identify persons who have not yet committed a crime, but who, based on premonition evidence, are going to commit a crime. And then they swoop in and arrest those pre-criminals before they can carry out their dastardly deeds. Well, certainly this is the same precog logic that runs the drug war, though I agree with Barr that this swooping into bars to arrest patients or drinkers is flat out wrong. What is most puzzling is that Barr and his cohorts cannot see the exact parallel to the drug war mechanisms and basic civil rights that are on display here. It's really weird, but I'm now quoting and agreeing with Bob Barr. All this fits right in with the eye-in-the-sky perspective of retired Admiral John Poindexter and the cherished Total Information Awareness System he's building at the Pentagon. Collect all the information on as many people as you can in advance. Decide who might be bad and act on it. And so what if you invade the privacy of virtually every law-abiding citizen in the country? You might be able to possibly identify a potential lawbreaker. The good retired admiral would really like those guys down at the Fairfax precinct. That's his kind of guys. Now, we are already, as a society, reaping what we've sown, and this is not the movies. And that's the end of the quote from Bob Barr. I want to say he's really a reformer. He just can't open his eyes wide enough to see the light. Another story, the Dogwood Trails Narcotics Task Force is among several multiple defendants named in a federal lawsuit filed by a Jacksonville, Florida couple alleging law enforcement officials forcefully and wrongfully entered their home more than 2 years ago. In a lawsuit filed in U.S. District Court, plaintiffs Hubert and Doris Robinson alleged they were in their residence in Jacksonville when seven officers representing the task force descended upon their home in a violent and brutal manner. The lawsuit, filed December 17th, seeks actual and exemplary damages of unspecified amounts in addition to attorney's fee. From the San Antonio Express, during home invasions in Edinburgh last weekend, six people were gunned down, apparently in a drug-motivated attack. Here's a quote, "The latest multiple slaying is as shocking as the one in nearby Donna. Six barmaids were ambushed outside the mobile home where they lived." And in another case in November, two men beat another man to death outside an Edinburgh bar. None of those cases have been solved. What should particularly concern authorities is that in at least one of these instances, the Edinburgh killers posed as police officers. Here's a letter I wrote to the editor of that paper. The black market rules from Bogota to Matamoros, from Washington, D.C. to San Francisco, and there is precious little that law enforcement can do to end this 88-year-old drug war. Death once again shocks the Rio Grande Valley with the execution of six more people in another drug-motivated attack. Marijuana is a weed, so is coca, and other than for its beautiful blooms, so too would be the opium poppy. It is the prohibition laws, and it's a resulting in enormous profits that bring drug violence to our communities. Drug traffickers are more than willing to break every one of the Ten Commandments in order to maintain their share of this multi-million dollar black market. That they use extortion, murder, bribery of public officials, and other illegal tactics should no longer come as any shock. Criminals in police apparel? It should be no surprise that the wolf would wear sheep's clothing in order to maintain their highly lucrative schemes. With controlled distribution of cannabis, coca leaves, and opium to adults, we could immediately end this drug war, bankrupt the cartels, save billions of tax dollars, cut down on overdose deaths, free up our prisons for those who break the Ten Commandments, and reconcile the distrust between the community and law enforcement. Well, there's so much news about the drug war grinding to a halt. You don't have to hide anymore. At the close of the show, we're going to give you lots of organizations, lots of contacts you can make to help end this trillion-dollar fiasco. Now, I want to welcome the head of the Canadian Marijuana Party, a vendor of fine buds to medical marijuana patients on the Internet, and a champion of civil and human rights in Canada, Mr. Mark Boris St. Morris. Can you hear me, Mark?
There.
Hey, Boris, how are you?
I'm good, you?
I'm doing well, sir. It's good to have you with us.
Nice to be there.
Yes, sir. There's so much great news in Canada. I mean, it's just boiling up all over the place. I felt rather ignorant this morning. And if you will excuse me, I'm going to play a little clip here that I discussed with our friend Eugene Oscapella. And he's going to provide most of the ammunition for our discussion, I hope.
Great.
Thank you. Could you tell us what's going on up there?
Well, in a nutshell, Dean, what's happening is the courts are doing what our parliament should have been doing. The courts are looking at our cannabis laws and seeing that they don't make a lot of sense. In one case, the case with Marc-Boris Saint-Maurice in Montreal, they basically threw out a prosecution against him for distributing medical marijuana. About a couple of weeks later, a court in Windsor, Ontario, just across the border from Detroit, said that the law against possession of marijuana in Canada was unconstitutional. And then just a couple of days ago, a court acquitted a local lawyer of driving while impaired. He had been smoking marijuana while driving, but they didn't find any evidence of impairment. And just recently, the most recent one was just yesterday, when an Ontario court said that the medical marijuana regulations introduced by the government 2 years ago were unconstitutional. It's educating the public, because the judges are you know, pointing out to the absurdity of the law or the insufficiency of the law in many cases. So it's starting to make our laws more rational in this country. But in both our countries, I think there are a lot of people who profit from the present system.
Well, I don't want to, I don't know, negate what's going on up there. It just seems like you can't exactly smoke a joint and go in the police station yet. Would that be a fair assumption?
I dare say at this point, if you tried to do that, they might lock the doors and just say that they're closed for the day and tell you to go home or something.
Kind of like what happened over in with the Dutch experience in Stockport, I guess, right?
I have no idea.
Well, they actually did that there. The police actually locked the doors to keep from having to arrest some people.
Well, I think that's going to be the next step, especially everything is, it's, they're getting hit from all sides here, especially in the courts. Recreational marijuana, medical marijuana, distribution, cultivation, possession, people are getting arrested for pot and are fighting back in the courts, and people even are taking the government to court and going on the offensive. So it's just, it's nonstop, and I think, you know, Eugene Oscapella earlier was saying it, the courts are doing what the government hasn't, being that the government doesn't want to deal with this issue. They're always quick to pass it off or avoid it. And what's happened is that the courts are getting stuck with it time and time again. And, you know, some poor judge who's probably pretty well educated, actually, and who's seen enough cases of marijuana, they know it's not that big a deal. And I think they're sick of having to be stuck spending time on this, and now even having to, decide whether or not the law is constitutional, and they're just fed up.
And it's wonderful to hear. It's like music coming across the border to me, I tell you. Here in Texas, we're about 100 years behind you, apparently, but I'm sure reality will creep down here quicker than another 100 years. Tell us about your acquittal. I mean, what were the charges and the results? How was that?
Well, I was arrested with one of our co-workers, Alex, in February 2000 for trafficking and possession with intent to traffic at the Montreal Compassion Club. And we spent about 2-3 years in court. And now we had pled that it was unconstitutional to prevent trafficking, given that there are already people who have permission to possess marijuana for medical purposes, so that by not giving these medical marijuana users the right to buy it, and by not giving someone the right to sell it to these users, their rights were being infringed. And the judge agreed with us. The only thing that the judge could not agree with us, we wanted him to strike the law down, but because it was a lower court judge, he was of the opinion that it was not within his jurisdiction to strike the law down.
But his heart would have done it had he been at the upper echelon, I would suppose, then.
I think so. It seems to be. I wonder if he may have, in fact, had the right to strike the law down, and that's maybe a finer point of law that I'll disagree with. But actually, we're just looking now whether or not we want to appeal, and whether or not the Crown will appeal, and there's even a good chance the Crown will not appeal, because I don't think they want to get hit again in the Court of Appeal. which I'm not sure what that would entail. I'm going to have to get some more expert advice from people such as Alan Young, who actually helped out quite a bit in this case from the beginning, from day one, so I'm pretty grateful for that.
I have been on one of the lists where there's been much discussion on this subject, and yes, wonderful work by Alan Young as well. You know, I think you guys are just brave souls, and I appreciate and respect what you do.
Well, gee, that's nice to hear, and I think it'll be a question of time before the United States catches up.
Well, we're going to do our dangdest. You can bet on that.
I think there's an interesting lesson in history that marijuana was made illegal about 14 years before the United States.
It was made illegal
in Canada in 1923.
Sounds right, then.
For the reason that there was basically less opposition at the time. People in Canada, someone said, oh, let's make marijuana legal, and pretty much no one was against it. So that's why it happened faster in the U.S. There was some opposition in the U.S. And I believe what we're seeing now with the whole reversal now of prohibition, it's going to be the same thing. There's much less opposition here in Canada, so we're more likely to go ahead maybe, you know, sooner than the United States. And there's a movement in the United States to end prohibition, but there's a lot more opposition. So it's going to take maybe another 10, 15 years for the states to catch up once Canada moves. So we're maybe just, you know, setting the tone for the years to come in the states.
Well, the U.S. is going to look pretty backwards and primitive here soon if we don't catch up with Europe and Canada. Many of the southern states, Mexico and South, Central and South America, drugs are quasi-legal for citizens. It's just they don't want people trafficking, which is how it should be here, I would suppose.
It'll come.
Yes. Tell us what you know about the 16-year-old who was acquitted about the charges and how that the result came about on that.
Well, what I know about that is that, someone who's 16, so we don't know who it is, but they were accused of possession of a small amount for recreational purposes. Now, the lawyer in that case argued that because the government did not change the law, back in July 2000, Terry Parker, who won in the Court of Appeals for medical purposes, in that case, the Court of Appeals said the government had a year to change the law, or else the law would be declared null and void. Now, after that year expired, the government made a regulation instead of a law. And now, this lawyer argued that because it was a regulation instead of a law, the government did not meet its requirements according to that Court of Appeals ruling, and thus, because it hadn't met the requirements, the law was null and void. What I've heard is that although the judge agreed and refused to hear the case, that it was more of a debate on the form of the law, the formalities, as opposed to the substance, which makes it a little weaker as far as the argument goes, because they never even debated whether or not prohibition was right or wrong. They simply said, well, they made a regulation instead of a new law, so everything is not up to standard. So it's not as interesting when it's a formality of law as opposed to the actual substance of the law.
All right. That is a tough one there. Okay. Now, was it just 3 days ago or something that the driver...
Reimer.
Huh?
Rick Reimer, yeah. Who was accused of driving impaired because he smoked medical marijuana for his multiple sclerosis. That was quite interesting because apparently when the police arrested him, he had a joint dangling from his lips smoking.
Yes.
He got out of the car and was pretty brazen about it.
Yes.
And the police said that he was stumbling and that he seemed to stagger. But, I mean, this individual has multiple sclerosis, so... Of course, this person has some coordination problems, but it has nothing to do with the marijuana. If anything, the marijuana helps his coordination problems.
Certainly, yes.
And again, gratefully, the judge agreed and saw the light. And especially, Rick's an ex-lawyer who pled his own case and defended himself, and apparently had smoked a joint the morning he came into court just before walking in and reeked of pot and explained, well, you know, Your Honor, I'm stoned right now and seem to be able to argue the finer points of law, so if I can argue the finer points of law, I suspect I should be able to drive a car. That was pretty interesting.
I love it, yes. I would love to have a debate with, Asa Hutchison, and he has a fifth of Jack Daniels, and I've got a ounce of BC Bud. And let's see who gets through the hour, you know. I mean, that's...
I don't know. Is Asa a drinker? I didn't even know it.
I don't know.
Probably is.
I don't know.
All that high-pressure Washington work, you know.
Yes.
Trying to calm my nerves.
Okay, now, this latest one that was just, yesterday? Is it somewhat like the situation with the 16-year-old where they've declared the marijuana laws kind of void or non-existent?
Case, just recently with Alan Young and the people at the Toronto Compassion Club.
Yes.
No, that was a group of patients, including someone who runs a Compassion Club and I think someone who grows marijuana. They teamed together and did a class action kind of suit where they pursued the government. They went on the offensive. They, I guess for lack of a better term, they sued the government, saying that the regulations were unconstitutional because the regulations the government put together for people to have access to medical marijuana, they were unconstitutional because they were too complicated and overly burdensome or put an overly burdened the patient for a treatment that they would normally be entitled to anyway or some anyway, to the effect that the regulations were so complicated that they were overly restrictive because patients couldn't meet the requirements when obviously they needed the medication. So that's another great one. And that one is not about the formality of the law or whatever regulation, et cetera. That one's got a lot of substance.
And that had to, if I might interrupt, that had a lot to do with people having to go to two specialists and not having access to specialists in their town, et cetera, who fit the criteria.
Exactly. And I think they brought some patients who had the license.
Yes.
And some patients who were unable to get the licenses, but that both had the same disease. And so when the judge sees that, well, one person's got the sickness and has a license, this other person has the sickness, the same thing, and can't get the license, it's like, well, what the hell's going on here? There's going to be something wrong. And it's obviously not the sick person's fault. So they logically seem to make sense.
Exactly. Now, I want to alert our listeners out there. We're going to take your calls here in just a few minutes. If you wanted to get first in line here, our number, 713-526-5738. That's 713-526-5738.
Oh, and one last thing, Dean,
yes.
Which we forgot in all this, is after our case on the 19th of December when we got our decision and they threw out the charges against us for trafficking, we had set up a few weeks previously a website which was ready to go, which we launched on the day of our decision, which is called MarijuanaHomeDelivery.com. And our reaction to getting acquitted was to launch a Cross Canada internet delivery service for marijuana for medical purposes, and we have the websites up at worldwideweb.marijuanahomedelivery.com, and we take orders and we send it through the mail to anyone in Canada who needs it.
And I think that's wonderful. I understand there are many rural areas where they don't have access to those doctors necessarily, or even especially to the growers in this situation.
There's less than a dozen compassion clubs across Canada, mostly in the big cities. So anyone who's outside of those areas is pretty much not serviced. So we are trying to settle that problem in this way.
Yes, and you know it's humanitarian. It's a wonder the government can't get anything out of those mines that Slim Sham or whatever it is. And,
yeah. And the government spent $5 million to grow pot in some abandoned mine shaft and has yet to distribute 1 gram of it. This is years ago. And I'm thinking, hell, for a tenth of that, we could have done way better and grown loads and loads of grape pot. So I think they gave their money to the wrong people.
Right. I wanted to ask you about that. I met a gentleman out in during the normal convention in San Francisco this past April, and he sold marijuana in the Bay Area, you know, to select clients, I suppose, you know, via the internet. And I've not been to see the, I guess you might call it, openness of Canada, Vancouver in particular. I've heard about, but it was so refreshing that in San Francisco, the mayor of the town actually came out into a crowd of people smoking marijuana, held a fairly long conversation, visited with people while they were smoking. And, it just seems that, it's the right thing to do. There's so much less harm involved, just a distraction from the violence of this drug war that these guys seem to want to maintain forever.
I think preventing people to get access to marijuana is what the shameful thing is in this day and age, and that's the crime. So,
No, I couldn't agree more, Boris. It's now for us down here, the where we're foundering so much, we need help. And I was wondering if you would describe the mechanisms and the successes of the Canadian Marijuana Party, and how some of your efforts might be, you know, translated or duplicated down here.
Well, the thing is to get involved, to get politically active. I think there's a certain advantage in Canada that it's a smaller country, so it's much easier for the grassroots to network around here. You know, there's only a dozen cities that are really big that are worth mentioning. So it's possible for one person, you know, to go to all of these places and drum up support. The bar is so much higher in the United States, where there's, I mean, hundreds of major cities that have to be reached. And to do that, it's I mean, the challenge is so much greater. But, you know, don't underestimate what's going on in the United States. There are a lot of great organizations. I mean, there's NORML, there's the Marijuana Policy Project, there's DRCNet. I mean, there's the stuff you do on your show, and there's some congressmen, you know, statewide. I think what's happening in the United States and where it's happened so far and where the future is in regional movements, either municipally or statewide initiatives, where they can get local support. And again, it's easier to get support on a local level where you can go and reach, you know, a small group of people and get a grassroots movement going on a state level. And that's what we're seeing in the United States, all these state ballot initiatives and various stuff like that. In Canada, I guess we're just lucky that we can do that on a national level. When I launched the party, it was, you know, quite simple. I hopped in my car and I drove all the way out to Vancouver and the way back to Montreal and stopped in every city and looked up every activist on the way. And out of the 12 or so cities in Canada, every city has sort of a major activist, and that was it. I don't think that could be done as easily in the United States.
I hear you. There's not that, I don't know, the link up between towns. I would consider, you know, it possible, but we need to just get people off their butts down here. They're afraid. Is basically my thoughts on it.
I don't blame them, and I understand. I can see why it'd be scary to be a pot activist in some parts of the United States these days. Jeez, you get locked up. I'm sure that if what I'm doing now, and with the attitude I've had all my life, if I was in the United States, they locked me up a long time ago.
I hear you. But, well, nonetheless, you battled against worse odds in the beginning. I'm certain of that. I want to invite folks to give us a call here, 713-526-5738. That's 713-526-5738. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be back to take your calls.
I helped hijack an airplane.
I helped blow up a nightclub.
So what if it gets 11 miles to the gallon?
I gave money to a terrorist training camp in a foreign country.
It makes me feel safe.
I helped our enemies develop weapons of mass destruction.
What if I need to go off-road?
Everyone has one.
I helped teach kids around the world to hate America.
I like to sit up high.
I sent our soldiers off to war.
Everyone has one.
My life, my SUV.
I don't even know how many miles it gets to the gallon.
This is Mark Greer, Executive Director of Drug Sense. You're listening to Cultural Baggage on 90.1 KPFT in Houston. To end the drug war, visit MAPINC.org. That's MAPINC.org. Get active, stay aware, stay informed, and let's bring an end to this nonsense.
Say, doctor, can you do something about my searing pain?
Well, there is medication, although it's a little controversial. I'm talking about medicinal marijuana, prescription pot, Texas THC. Homer, the best tonic is chronic.
But isn't marijuana or dope illegal?
Only for those who enjoy it.
Well, there you have it. Good old Homer.
That's great. Funny, that ad that just aired before that, which a lot of controversy because it's going on TV these days.
Oh, yes, the SUV.
And that was a flash media presentation on the Internet, like, basically about a week after the Super Bowl ad campaign last February came out. Someone had spoofed it on a flash animation, and it was all over the net, and I think it's ironic that it's now turned into an actual production on television.
Yeah, with actors and actresses. It's I actually captured that off the Internet, by the way.
I think SUVs are by far much more harmful than marijuana, that's for sure.
Well, and it provides a lot more money to the terrorist states.
There's a big movement in the United States. They're blowing SUVs up now. I don't know if you saw that.
I did not.
Earth Liberation Front. They actually They vandalize SUVs, and then they send press releases saying they're responsible for it, and they just trash the hell out of those things.
Wow.
It's kind of, sounds kind of fun, actually. Forgive me, but...
I hear you. Okay, well, we do have a caller online. We do have some open lines. I'll tell you again, it's 713-526-5738. Let's go to Scott from South Houston. Oh, okay, we'll need just a second here. Let's see. Boris, I wanted to ask you, have you lived in Canada your whole life?
Yes, indeed I have. I'm proud to say.
I'm sorry to ask, but I don't know, but what town are you in?
I'm in Montreal.
Montreal.
Which is in the French-speaking portion of Canada, which is the province of Quebec. So.
Yes, okay. Okay, looks like we're ready. We have Scott on line one. Do you hear us, Scott?
Yes, I got you, Dave.
Well, yes, sir. Do you have a question?
Well, I was wanting to say that we got to stop calling it weed, for one thing, you know.
Well.
An herb?
Yeah.
Or just pot?
Sure.
Hello?
You're here? Yeah, I tend to agree with you. I mean, it started out as basically hemp or cannabis, and then we had Mr. Anslinger come on board and reach down to Mexico and pick up the word marijuana.
Right.
So people wouldn't even know what the hell it is they were outlawing.
Him and the Hearst Empire and all that.
Yeah.
But as far as Asa Hutchinson, as far as I've heard, he's a teetotaler, I believe. He carries a flask, but it's got holy water in it. And
well,
before he does a press conference, he sprinkles holy water on himself.
Well, I think that's Ashcroft.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Teetotaler or not, I don't know, but Walters looks like he might have tipped a few.
Yeah. Well, drinking is permission, you know, it's just like with tobacco, it's just something that permeates everything, you know. What they don't tell you about alcohol is it may not affect you today, it may not affect you 5 years from now, but if you drink, eventually you're going to have trouble with it.
Okay, I want to half hour here. I just want to tell folks you're listening to Cultural Baggage, the Unvarnished Truth on KPFT Houston. Our guest is Boris Saint-Maurice, head of the Canadian Marijuana Party, purveyor of fine cannabis over the internet, and an activist for human and civil rights. Boris, tell us again, what is that website?
Yeah, it's worldwideweb dot marijuana home delivery, one word, no space, .com.
Very good.
A little long for the website, but I guess that's the way of the future.
Well, it is. It's going to be, someday it'll be 10,000 letters just to get there.
Yeah,
which is quarter pound.
Because we called up someone to do an online payment and told me, hi, I run a website called marijuanahomedelivery.com. And the guy said, is that what you do? I'm like, yeah, that's what we do. And so suddenly told me that he couldn't help me. Well, he thought it was very amusing, but that he couldn't help me for any website payments.
I don't know. It's outrageous. I had a friend who had a marijuana leaf on her checks, and the bank didn't want her account anymore once they noticed it.
Wow.
Yeah.
We have marijuana leaves on our checks for the marijuana party.
Well, certainly. And this was a Florida marijuana or cannabis.
Interesting.
I'm sorry, I can't remember the exact name.
That's interesting.
Jody James's outfit. Scott, did you have another question for Boris?
What I was wondering, I don't know, I'm not on the net or anything, but price is on a quarter pound.
Well, we don't ship to the United States, by
the way. Well, I understand that. I was just, you know, curiosity.
Up in Canada, a quarter pound is probably about $700 Canadian dollars, which is about $450 U.S.
Right.
But this is
very, very kind quality.
Oh, yeah.
What seeds do you use up there?
What seeds?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we're Grimmies down here. We don't really know what you're talking about. We just want to hear about it.
I'm not impressed with names of strains and stuff because you can call it what you want.
No, I didn't know.
But we got really, really good indoor, well-grown, strong, kind buds. Really strong, hard, dense nuggets. I don't know how to explain. I mean, there's M39, there's Afghani strains, there's... I mean, you know, call them juicy fruit bubble gum or whatever, but they're all good. They're all great.
Yeah. Okay, I'm drooling. That's good enough. I appreciate that.
And I mean, look, there's good pot. I had a friend down in Texas, actually, who grew some really good strawberry bud years back. So.
Well, Texas can grow them about 28 feet tall if you know.
Not afraid of helicopters.
Well, someday.
Oh, yeah, you got to keep hope.
Texans like it big, right?
Well, it just does that natural.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, Scott, I want to thank you for your call. Looks like we do have another caller on the line, and I want to ask the rest of you out there, give us a call, 713-526-5738. Looks like we have Matt from Vancouver. Hello, Matt.
Hey, Dean.
Hey, sir. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm well. Do you have a question for Boris?
I do so. I wonder if you could tell us about any other experiences he's had with law enforcement. And I seem to recall that at one time he had a tangle with the Imperial forces. And I think he got off, but perhaps you could tell us that story. And the other thing I wonder is, does he think he's going to have any competition from Paul Martin in the next federal election?
Interesting. And I recognize that place, by the way, as our good friend Matt Elrod in Vancouver there.
Yes.
Well, let's see. The first thing, as far as Paul Martin, who's the contender to replace our prime minister, actually, I think there will be quite a good tussle there, because from what I can see, everyone in the Canadian government's been quick to, you know, say something and take position about marijuana. But Paul Martin, our future prime minister, or what some say is the next prime minister in waiting, has yet to speak out again about it in any way, good or bad, so we have no idea what his position is. And I fear that Paul Martin will not be a friend of the marijuana movements, as he's trying to, you know, establish his leadership. He's not going to want to rock the boat. So I'm worried about that, and I think that if he ignores the issue, he'll end up giving the marijuana party votes. As far as my experiences with law enforcement, well, I try and stay away from them, but sometimes that's not always an option.
Didn't he once get charged with assault?
I thought he was talking about something else, because I actually crossed Canada with my car covered in marijuana leaves and logos as I was promoting the party.
He had a forged picture or something of your health minister, right?
No, I had Stockwell Day, who at the time was a rising star, who's now flopped. I had that stuck on my dashboard, and I had put a fake joint in his mouth. It was kind of this zen little, you know, get to know your opponent thing. And got pulled over, and the guy thought it was a real joint, searched my car, and I actually still, to this day, am wanted on a warrant for not showing up in this Northern Ontario court for some 3 grams of pot. And the warrant's only got about a 200-mile radius from, you know, where they actually would pick me up. But, yeah, I'm a fugitive from the law right now as we speak for marijuana. I kind of wear it as a badge of honor. But the other incident Matt's referring to was during a demonstration on Parliament Hill during the elections in 2001, where I attempted to put a cream pie in the face of a statue on Parliament Hill, a statue of Emily Murphy, who is Canada's first woman judge. And for all the good things that she did for women's rights, she was also the judge responsible for prohibition being adopted in Canada. And I was arrested for that, although I never got to pie the statue. They prevented me from getting to the statue because they were just downright fearful of anything involving cream pies on Parliament Hill. And then they tried to prevent me, so I pied myself and got arrested for putting a pie in my own face and got off eventually, thanks to some video.
I'm not sure how that would be absurdity of it all.
Anyway, well, I got a lot of coverage out of it.
Anyway, thanks, Boris.
Oh, well, thank you, Matt, and keep up the great work you're doing with Drug Sense and the Canadian Media Awareness Project and all. I mean,
and with my website, come to
Matt,
the...
Matt Elrod,
I thought up a logo for your business, Boris, pushing the envelope.
I'll take it, yeah, sure, especially as we're pushing it in the mail, huh? I like that.
Yeah, pushing the envelope. You get it?
I do. I think it's all brilliant.
Right. Okay, take care.
Thanks, Matt.
Thank you, Matt.
Matt Elrod, who runs the Internet when it comes to drug reform, he is the net.
You betcha. You betcha. Well, we do have some open lines. Our number, 713-526-5738. Boris, I wanted to ask you, what do you see in the future? I hear the justice minister is going to look at it. He's maybe going to decrim, but the Senate said let's legalize. And it's a pretty big flux up there. What do you see in the future?
I see lots of pot in the future. I plan to be selling medical marijuana for a good long time. But I don't think our justice minister is going to pull it off. I don't think he's got enough time. I don't think there's I still, ironically, don't think there's enough political will in Parliament to rush this through. And the only way they could get legislation done in time in the next 3 months is if the Prime Minister made it a top priority and put everyone on this, you know, and made this like the thing. And I don't think the Prime Minister's got that kind of priority in line. And with the way elections and politics go here, hell, in 2 months we could be facing an election. The Prime Minister could be out the door. We could have someone new in power. So there's no guarantees in through the legislative system. I don't think it's going to happen. And I think it's just another politician making another promise, trying to look cool on the pot issue with very little intention to do anything about it. And I think the courts are going to end up stuck with it again in the spring, the Supreme Court, and they're the ones who are going to stick it to government.
Well, let's hope so, because it seems that the judges are, and certain politicians up there are not afraid to stand up and say things out loud, boldly, to actually make a change. And
People are keen to say it, but not very many people are keen to do anything about it. So.
Right. Well, you have to recompartmentalize it somehow, I guess. Well, I guess the good thing is that, I don't know, this continuity could just lead to kind of these things dissolving on their own, if nothing else, I guess.
I look to, you know, in Canada, what happened with gay rights and with abortion, where the government was never keen on touching these issues because they were just so volatile and contentious. And eventually the courts just chipped away at the law until it was rendered useless. And there's not much in terms of laws preventing or permitting abortion here, but people who need an abortion can go out and get one. So there's no federal legislation in that level. And with gay rights, it's the same thing. There's starting to be some legislation, but it's all built around a couple of important court cases that went and pretty much defined what the, you know, a gay person's rights are. And now legislation that's coming along these days has to fit in to the reality that, you know, these people have rights. And that's what we need for the marijuana issue. We need a couple of really good court cases. The Supreme Court case is coming up in April. And if we can get, you know, basically an admission from the courts that pot smokers have rights, well, that's it. We're set from there. That's going to guide public policy for years to come.
I hear you. Now, I've had the occasion to hear Asa Hutchison speak. Did you by chance see him or Walters when they made their grand tour of Canada?
I actually got to meet John Walters when he was in Montreal. We organized a parallel press conference just down the block from where he was speaking. And, you know, told him he was welcome to visit Canada as a tourist, but that he could leave his drug policy ideas at home. Especially, you know, if the United States policy had been shown to be effective in reducing use, maybe I'd be receptive to what he had to say. But until they can sort out their own mess at home, we're pretty much not interested in what he has to suggest as far as advice, you know.
Well, I've heard it said we've spent, you know, roughly $1 trillion, and drugs are more available, more pure, and, you know, than ever before.
Yeah, but then again, you know, he's a sly devil. He's slick. He's got his political doublespeak down, and that's his job. We got to ask him a few questions at the press conference. I thought it strange he had no idea that there were Americans seeking refugee status in Canada for medical marijuana, such as Steve Cubby and Rene Bourget and Steve Tuck. He had no idea, so I found out about that because I asked him the question, so.
Well, they don't even read their own reports, so I don't know what we could expect from them anyway.
Yeah, well, he seemed pretty much one-track-minded and on his agenda and spewing his rhetoric and doing a fine job at it for what it's worth.
Well, yeah, him and Hutchison are both very amicable guys, if you can see them in that light, I guess.
Well, I don't have a problem. They came up here, and our press conference attracted more attention to what they were doing. And with people like this, just the trick is to get the spotlight on them and actually, you know, when they are speaking, get them a microphone and get their message out to the people, because the more they speak, the more they do us a favor, because they just look dumber and dumber every time they come up and do it. So, you know, give them the stage. Knock yourselves out, guys, you know.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Put the spotlight on bold, yes.
Strangely enough.
Yeah, I think it's been 3 weeks, maybe 3.5 weeks ago, the RAND scientific report came out that said, you know, marijuana is not addicting. And it was just almost at that same time the U.S. government started another big push about how addictive marijuana is. I just think it shows how dumb they really are.
Yeah, John Walters pushing that. That's his latest.
Yeah.
2 million addicts. Well, whatever.
Yeah, coerced treatment.
That's a bad one. There's no future there.
No, wait, right. You get a young kid smoking pot and you put him in with a bunch of hardened junkies. Yeah, that's going to do the kid a lot of good.
Teach him a few more tricks he didn't know already.
Yeah, yeah. But, I don't know. It's that compassionate Christian crap.
Yeah.
Well, tell you what, we're about to wind it down here. But once again, please give our audience the website address where they can learn more about what you guys are up to.
Yeah, it's worldwideweb.marijuanahomedelivery.com. And that's where we're selling marijuana on the internet, but, you know, only to Canadians. So sorry. So there's a few people doing it on the net, I noticed, but a couple of them, a lot of them out there look like they're scam sites. I'm not sure what the deal is with that, so.
Well, yeah, you should always be careful, but Boris is certainly legitimate for any of you Canadian citizens that are listening on Sirius Radio Network.
Yeah, we have a real address and a phone number, and you can get a real person on the phone, so that's always helpful.
Well, Boris, anything else you'd want to relay to our audience?
Well, just with the website, we have a guarantee that we ship it once, and if it doesn't make it, we'll ship it a second time at our cost. So I don't think any dealers out there can say the same. So, but no, all I can say is keep up the great work over there, Dean, and everyone on the net, and everyone who's fighting for their rights to use this plant. Don't give up. We will eventually get it, and we're on the verge in Canada, and hopefully that'll have a great effect in inspiring some Americans to do the same.
Well, Boris, thank you so much. I salute you for your work, and I hope we get to do this again soon.
I hope so, too, and I'm sure we'll be in touch somehow one way or another.
All right. Well, folks, we're going to have a couple of more tracks off the CD here for you, and then, I don't know, listen close, get your pen, write down some information here. There's ways you can help.
This is George. This is the gas that George bought for his SUV. This is the oil company executive who sold the gas that George bought for his SUV. These are the countries where the executive bought the oil that made the gas that George bought for his SUV. And these are the terrorists who get money from those countries every time George fills up his SUV.
There exists an organization based in Houston comprised of doctors, nurses, judges, educators, and many other professionals, the Drug Policy Forum of Texas. Their founder and executive director, G. Allen Robinson, is the distinguished professor of pharmacology at the University of Texas Health Science Center. The man who first proved there is no lethal dose of marijuana and who, with his associates, works with state and local governments to change the medieval drug law. We are winning, but we can prevent thousands of drug war casualties with your help. Please contact the Drug Policy Forum of Texas at www.dpft.org or call 713-784-3196.
If you want to be part of the solution, there's some meetings coming up that you might want to be involved in. Coming up, actually later on today, the 11th is Saturday, Civilians Down will be having their meeting at the Montrose Library. That'll be at 1 p.m. today. The Montrose Library is at 4100 Montrose, just a little bit north of Richmond. Coming up on the 15th, Drugs, Crimes, and Politics, being put on by the Drug Policy Forum of Texas, will be on Houston Media Source. Al Buford and Jerry will be having their year in review. That's Channel 17 on Warner Cable. Coming up on the 16th, Houston Normal will be having their monthly meeting. That'll be at the Golden Island Buffet Restaurant, located at 901A North Shepherd. That starts at 7:30 on the 16th. On the 20th, the Harris County Greens will be having their monthly meeting. That'll be at the Hare Krishna Temple, which is located at 1340 West 34th. That's going to start at 6:30 p.m. Also on the 20th, the Drug Policy Forum of Texas will be having their monthly meeting starting at 7 p.m. Their meetings are at the First Unitarian Universalist Church, located at 5200 Fannin at Southmore. That's about all the meetings coming up for this month. Back to you, Dean.
Thank you, Steve. Okay, this week, instead of a War of Terror comedy playhouse, we're going to have some services for the church of God's evident truth. What is God for? welcome to this service of the Church of God's Evident Truth. Reading from the Bible, Genesis chapter 1, verse 29. And God said, Behold, I have given you every herb bearing seed which is upon the face of all the earth, and every tree in the which is the fruit of a tree yielding seed. To you it shall be for meat. From the time of Moses until that of the latter prophet Samuel, holy anointing oil was used by the shamanic Levite priesthood to receive the revelations of the Lord. At the dawn of the age of kings, Samuel extended the use of the anointing oil to the Hebraic monarchs by anointing Saul and later David as Messiah king. These kings led their people with the benefit of insights achieved through using the holy anointing oil to become, quote, possessed with the Spirit of the Lord, end quote. The ancient recipe for this anointing oil recorded in the Old Testament book of Exodus, chapter 30, verses 20 through 23, included over 9 pounds of flowering cannabis tops, Hebrew canna blossom, extracted into a hind, about 6.5 liters of olive oil, along with a variety of other herbs and spices. The ancient chosen ones were literally drenched in this potent cannabis oil. For nearly 500 years, colonialist powers like England, Spain, and later the U.S. made it their business to impose their will on lesser countries to force new religions and morals on all the, quote, heathen cultures of this earth. In the process, they vilified and demonized the use of such drugs as marijuana, coca, and opium, which previously had been a recognized part of many religions, many cultures, for thousands of years. In the early 20th century, corporate heads foresaw gleaming profits in prohibiting the use of certain plants. They claimed that Chinamen on opium were a threat to a decent society, that Mexicans and blacks would rape white women after smoking marijuana, that prison or death were too good for users, and that the religious underpinnings of these drugs were sacrilegious and evil. Today, the U.S., through its drug convention treaties, forces its ideas of Judeo-Christianity and all the attendant drug laws and morals on the whole world. U.S. media now ignores the ongoing drug reform in England, Spain, Portugal, Canada, and much of the rest of the world. Research, experience, and common sense have shown these enlightened countries that the medieval drug laws are simply a mechanism that, if left unchecked, would someday devour the meaning, the very fabric of liberty. The U.S. is willing to lock up more than 2 million of our own people in order to support a growing prison industrial complex. We jumped into this drug war. We've lit the fire by providing millions of dollars for interdiction, prison, police, and informants. If we pay attention, we can see that there's also a relevant body count to our drug war. People whom we should care about are dying because of drug prohibition. School kids mistakenly shot by gangs. Innocents shot during a raid on the wrong apartment. A prime example of the random heat from this war would be the missionaries shot out of the sky in Peru, or the thousands of peasants butchered every year in Colombia. Drug prohibition instigates evil worldwide. Prohibition takes something of minimal value and changes it into something of immense value. In the effort to grow, process, ship, and sell drugs, many criminals join in this financial feast. But the greatest evil of drug prohibition is the collusion of the U.S. government. Reading from Genesis chapter 1, verse 12. And the earth brought forth grass and herb yielding seed after his kind, and the tree yielding fruit whose seed was in itself after his kind, and God saw that it was good. Now, from the Declaration of Independence, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. To all those compassionate conservatives out there who lead this drug war charge for the sake of the children, who are then more than willing to send these same children to prison once they reach 17 for sodomy lessons. If you're out there listening, if you're a politician or a preacher or a policeman, and if you want to refute these claims, come down here and defend your stance. Otherwise, live with these words. You are a charlatan, a hypocrite, a liar of immense proportions. And whether through your sins of omission or commission, it is you that supports this great evil. If you would like to share today's service with others, please have them visit www.unvarnishedtruth.org. That's one word, unvarnishedtruth.org. In 1995, former CIA Director William Colby stated, quote, "The Latin American drug cartels have stretched their tentacles much deeper into our lives than most people believe. It's possible they are calling the shots at all levels of government." On December 13, 2002, the outgoing chair of the U.S. Government Reform Committee, Dan Burton, avoiding the word legalization, began to talk about ending the harms of the drug war.
I want to tell you something. I have been in probably 100, 150 hearings like this at various times in my political career. And the story is always the same. This goes all the way back to the 60s, you know, 35, 40 years ago. But there's no end to it. Over 70% of all crime is drug-related, and you've alluded to that today. We saw on television recently Pablo Escobar gunned down, and everybody applauded that and said, that's the end of the Medellin cartel. But it wasn't the end. Yeah, there's still a cartel down there. They're still all over the place. When you kill one, there's 10 or 20 or 50 waiting to take his place. There's always going to be another person in line to make that money. And we go into drug eradication, and we go into rehabilitation, and we go into education, and we do all these things. And the drug problem continues to increase, and it continues to cost us not billions, but trillions of dollars. Trillions! And we continue to build more and more prisons, and we put more and more people in jail, and we know that the crimes that they're committing are related most of the time to drugs. So I have one question I'd like to ask all of you, and I think this is a question that needs to be asked. What would happen if there was no profit in drugs?
Okay, just a quick note we got from Drug Sense. Didn't get it in time to discuss it with Mark, but I'll kind of paraphrase it. Will stated that his dad was a pioneer in the Canadian gay rights movement, and as a founding member of Ontario's NDP gay lesbian delegation, he addressed the national NDP convention and urged the party to support cannabis legalization by reminding them that Queen Victoria had used cannabis for menstrual cramps. His name is Bill Dwyer, and he lived in Toronto until he retired. I just wanted to pass that along. Next week, please be sure to tune in to the always great The Other Side with Glenn Urbach. And then in 2 weeks, come back here and join us. Our guest will be Professor Buford Terrell of the South Texas College of Law. And please, listen every day at 4:20 for the Drug War News. To listen to any of our shows recorded online, just visit our website at www.unvarnishedtruth.org. That's www.unvarnishedtruth.org. And you can link up with lots of good information there. So till next time, please remember, you don't know what's in that bag. Be careful. For my producer, Steve Nolan, this is Dean Becker for Cultural Baggage, The Unvarnished Truth.